Okay, we are beginning the Haftarah of Parshas Truma, one of the easiest Haftarahs to read in the whole Chumash, because it's the story. It's a story of Shlomo HaMelech's building of the Beis HaMikdash, and it's really a long story in Malachim, and only a small segment of which finds its way here. Let's begin and learn a few psukim, and then try to appreciate it a little more. Vashem nasan chachma l'shloima kashadiba lai. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave wisdom to Shloima. You're all familiar with the dream Shloima had, in which he chose wisdom. And Shloima HaMelech got this gift of chachma. Vayhi shalom ben Chiram uben Shloima. And there was peace between Chiram, the king of Tyre, the king of the Lebanese country above Eretz Yisrael, uben Shloima. V'yichusu b'shneihem. And they made a bond between them, and a friendship ensued between Chiram and Shloimai. Chiram had been close to David HaMelech, was close to Shloimai, and God blessed him with a very long life. Although later other things happened with Chiram. But for today, what? He was allowed to make a bris with him. It was not a bris, presumably not a bris in Eretz Yisrael. You don't make a bris with others in Eretz Yisrael, but you can make a bris with other countries. And the Pasuk prefaces it by saying that Shloimai had the Chachma to understand, presumably, that this was proper. However, we stop from Pasuk Chavav in the Perek. Prior to that, in discussing the friendship of these two people, the Pasuk says that Shlomo did something else, which Chazal deride him for. He gave him certain cities in Eretz Yisrael. Now what it means exactly, he gave him certain cities in Eretz Yisrael is not clear. He may have given him just for tax purposes, but Shlomo got carried away. Why did he get carried away? Shlomo HaMelech, the Gemara says, Malach Bekipa. He ruled the entire world. Now he didn't rule the entire world in the same way that Nebuchadnezzar did. Nebuchadnezzar took an army and conquered the civilized world that existed in that time, so he ruled the world. Shlomo HaMelech did no such thing. He didn't fight a certain battle in his lifetime. A single battle in his lifetime, but he influenced the world. In other words, his greatness was so great that all of the, like we find later with the Queen of Sheba, they all came to him and sort of followed his example. He was, if you would think of it as an example, if today one country would have all the technological advances, and would know how to do all kinds of things, and all the other countries would follow suit. It happens to be that the technological ability is spread over many countries. But if one country had it and nobody else did, we would say that country is running the world, so to speak. So that said, Shlomo HaMelech saw it as his mission to spread the recognition of God throughout the world. And to that end, that's why he married the daughter of Paroi. That's why he sought to influence the other nations. And that was the double-edged sword of Shlomo's greatness. It was a greatness in the sense that he aspired to influence the whole world. And in a certain sense, it's a tragedy. The life of Shlomo HaMelech was a tragedy because he was so great, he had so much, he had everything, and he didn't accomplish the dreams that he had. He died leaving a split country. He died leaving a country that split between the southern and northern kingdoms. And to a certain degree, he was a very sad figure. Rav Palm used to talk about Shlomo HaMelech as a very sad period. It was a great time, and it was a sad time because Shlomo HaMelech was so into spreading the greatness of Klal Yisrael in the world that he didn't influence Klal Yisrael adequately. There was no marked growth from David HaMelech's time to Shlomo HaMelech's time within the Jewish people. And it's almost as if he was, so to speak, great in international policy and forgot about the national needs of the people. And did he reach Peru? That's very interesting.
He has some writing, but I can't remember the writing.
Okay. I'd be curious, to hear, but okay. So at any rate, this is the introduction. Now, the psukim that follows would puzzle us. Vayal HaMelech Shloimeh Mas Mekol Yisrael. Shlomo made a tax V'yamash shloishim elefish. The tax was 30,000 people. Now, first of all, let's just read about the working conditions of these 30,000 people. V'yishlochem levanoina. Now, these 30,000 were artisans, were people that knew how to build. He was building the Beis HaMikdash. He sent them to Lebanon. Lebanon had a great forest in those days. Asera salafim b'chaydish. Now, 30,000 people. Each month, 10,000 worked. Khalifa is chaydish yu balavanayin. They would switch places. They'd work 1 month, shnayim chadashim b'beisai. And 2 months, they'd go home. 2 months vacation, 1 month work. That's like federal workers today, more or less, no? Vadinoiram alamas. And Adinoiram was in charge. Now, the question is, what kind of tax was this? Rashi learns it was a financial tax. It was a money tax. Because he took money to be able to hire these workers. The other Rishayim disagree. They all learn that he actually took workers. He took the most talented workers and gave them the job. It was the tax, so to speak, among the people.
A draft,
sort of like a draft, to go and do work. The problem with that is that later, at the end of the building of the Beis HaMikdash, the Pasuk says somewhat strangely, the Pasuk says, "B'bnei Yisrael le'nasa shloimei oved," that all the people that worked on preparing the material for the Beis HaMikdash, none of them were Jews. They were all non-Jews. And that would seem to contradict what it says here. So be that as it may, there are two possibilities. Either he taxed them money and paid for non-Jewish workers, or he took Jewish workers, and he sent them for this type of work. The Gemara indicates they were Jews. The Gemara says that a person who has to leave his family on business shouldn't do it for more than 1/3 of the time. Business, even to learn Torah, should do 1/3, 2/3, should be home at least 2/3 of the time.
When it comes to doing mitzvahs, like baking matzahs and whatever, we try to use only Jews, so
why would he use non-Jews? So you'll have to get the tape. We discussed why he did it, especially because it has to be done l'shma, and how can you trust a non-Jew to do l'shma? And maybe we'll talk about it next time. Very good. Yishlachim doesn't have a dog. She sent them and they came back. Okay. Good. Vayihi l'shloimei shivim elef noisei sabol. Now listen to how many people are working on this one Beis HaMikdash. 70,000 people who schlepped. 70,000 schleppers. They had a truck that said Moshe's. And they schlepped the stones all from Lebanon down to Yerushalayim. It's a long trip, especially without a vehicle. Without a motorized vehicle. And 80,000 people who actually worked to chisel the stones out of to quarry the stones out of the mountain. Levad misari nitzavim l'shloimei asher ala malachim. Besides the supervisors, shloisha salafim v'shloish meyais to a 3,300 haroidim ba'am ha'isim b'malacha, who oversaw the work. V'yitzav ha'melech v'yasiu avonim gedaylois. And the king commanded, they brought gigantic stones, avonim yikarais, and valuable stones, liyaseid habayis, for the foundation, avdei gozis, stones that were chiseled out of a wall, of a stone quarry. V'yipsalu b'ayne shloimei b'ayne chir v'agivlim. And these people, the workers of Shlomo, the workers of Chir, worked together. V'yachinu ha'etzim, Chir was in charge of the wood. Vavanim and Shlomo's people in charge of the stones lived nice habayis to build the house. Now, first of all, just a practical thing. Why do you need 80,000 and 70,000, 150,000 to build? So you have to know, now we don't know what the Beis HaMikdash looked like. We learn about the Mishkan, and we picture a elaborate Mishkan. The Mishkan, we know, it was wooden beams and etc. The fanciness of the Beis HaMikdash is not described in the Psukim. Even in the Gemara, it's described incidentally. The Gemara there is talking about Kairish, the building of the second Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara says that the walls were a combination of stone and wood. And that the stone was inlaid and outlaid. They should look like waves. Exactly how you do it, I don't know. Like waves of water. So the Gemara says, Shlomo did the same. Shlomo also did three rows of stone and one row of wood, three rows of stone, one row of wood. Now, the Gemara mentions it incidentally, because the Gemara is saying that Koresh did it, and the Gemara is faulting that design for whatever reason the Gemara is discussing. The Gemara says, why are you faulting it? Shlomo did the same thing. What I mean to point out is that the intricacies of the building of the Beis HaMikdash were extraordinary, and the Pasuk doesn't describe them exactly. The Gemara says that the walls had, the Pasuk says later, the walls had etchings on them. They had designs, they didn't have stencils, they had to be etched by hand. The stone, the wood had etchings, and whatever was made of cloth had designs in the cloth as well. And you have to realize that they did everything measuring it with a ruler. So if a stone didn't fit, not much you could do. You think about the Kaisel, look at the Kaisel. Imagine they bring one stone and it's 5 inches too high. At least you can chisel it down. But, you know, it's not easy. Even you look at the stones today, they're not identical stones. And they had to be able to fit together and make a building and make a wall. So at any rate, this is a description of the immense manpower that was needed to build this Beis HaMikdash. I mentioned to you that Rav Palme had mentioned, you can read these psukim as a glorious building of the Beis HaMikdash. Rav Palme had mentioned that there was something missing. There's something failing in this, and I would like to read to you from Rabbi Hirsch on the Haftarah. Now, the Haftarahs were actually written by Rabbi Hirsch's son, Dr. Mendel Hirsch, but continuously based on his father's teachings. And I think it's an important, if you want to learn more than just the words of the Psukim, you want to get a feel of the time, I'm going to trouble you to listen to the entire paragraph that he describes, and I'll try to translate it into English as I read his English. He says the Haftarah of Parshas Truma contrasts. Now, how do you read Parshat? The Beis HaMikdash is the Haftarah, because the Mishkan was the Mishkan, and the Beis HaMikdash is the Mikdash. It's like a continuation. He says no, the Haftarah is a contrast. Contrast the proud, magnificent edifice of Solomon to the modest tent of appointed meeting, or Olmoed of the Sedra. Proud and magnificent though it was, greatly to the honor of God though it was erected, nevertheless, right from the account of its being built, we are not happy about it, about the Beis HaMikdash. Certainly everything was on a grand scale. All the preparations, all the requirements were grandiose. Whole armies of porters and stonemasons engaged. Everything carefully thought out long beforehand, the expenditure enormous, merely for the preparation of the cedar and fir timber for the building by Phoenician woodmen. Solomon had maintained the court of King Hiram, with whom he was on most friendly terms for years. And just as one knows about thousands of years, just as one knows after thousands of years how great the consumption of onions by the hordes of unhappy slaves who toiled at the building of the pyramids erected for the glory of the Egyptian rulers, so, only a few verses before our verse, we are told what colossal supplies Solomon was happy to deliver yearly to the king of Tyre. What a dismal picture does Israel present at this building. Where is the enthusiasm of the men and women which our Sedra describes? Would Solomon have tolerated any such private participation? Considering the origin and aim of the building, how much more glorious and holier was the work of the weaving and embroidering women and girls, the working of the Jewish men, so long unaccustomed to artistic work, under the guidance of Bezalel, so gifted with artistic instinct and judgment, than all the glories of Phoenician technique and Solomon's artistic taste. It was a different kind of participation that Solomon reserved for his people. Conscripted labor, reminiscent of Pharaoh's time, was what they had to render. And taskmasters, too, were not lacking. What are taskmasters? It is that strikes the thinking reader like an icy blast on reading this report. Did it strike you like an icy blast on reading the report? Do you have to send someone to Florida? No. He says, when you read this, and you read it after the parsha, it should hit you over the head. Beautiful parsha. The people came, they sat, they wove, Hamalacha Isadayo, Moshe Rabbeinu called them, and they all brought individual items. It's not the same when you tell people, all right, everyone give money for something. They say, okay, you make the chicken, you make the chicken soup, you make the kugel, and you have a get-together. It's just different. It's more personal. So he writes, it is that strikes the thinking reader like an icy blast on reading this report. To this is added the overvaluing of splendor and outside show in general, which show itself here. And the still greater resplendence in the building of his own royal palace, which follows here in Navi. This is why, now listen to what he writes, while the building was still going on, long before its completion, the warning and admonishing words of God were sent to Solomon, which formed the conclusion of our Haftarah, which I guess we'll do next time. They warn him against overvaluing the external appearance of this building, remind him that he has to thank his position as the king solely to God's promise to his father David, and that the continuance of this promise being kept is no wise dependent on his developing pomp and power, is solely dependent and conditional to his conscientiously keeping the laws of God in conduct and deed. So the idea here is that it was grand, it was elaborate, it was done with tremendous armies of people, and certainly it was beautiful, but it's not what the Jews needed. It's not what Klal Yisrael, Klal Yisrael doesn't need this stuff. Klal Yisrael doesn't need a fancy building, doesn't need, Klal Yisrael needs a place that has a feeling of Kedusha, that has a sense of Kedusha. Shlomo HaMelech, to defend him, as I said at the outset, was on a mission. Shlomo HaMelech's mission was to bring the whole world closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To bring the whole world under HaKadosh Baruch Hu's, to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in that mission, he needed a fancy Phoenician splendid building. But it was missing. It was missing the guts of the building. Now, when you read this, Zekeli Maveh was the year of fifth. Not you hire 150,000 workers. Okay. So, you know, you had a fifth more. It's not quite the Zekeli Maveh.
That's not what they needed. I mean, there was such purpose. You went in one way and came out another way so that there was...
But you could go in one way, come out the other way in a simpler building. You could do it here too.
No, but it was all designed to impress the Jews also, I'm sure.
I would hope that the Jews he was shooting at were not the Jews that were impressed by this. It was supposed to be a sense of Kedusha. And it doesn't go, it doesn't really, it really, Michtam Eliyahu says that there's a balance, a contrast, what he calls he has a name for it, where the more you focus on the external, you're giving up internal. There's no such thing as focusing on the external and keeping all the internal.
Why was the iron inlaid with gold, and why wasn't it just plain wood,
It's all true that, Ein Anias B'Makom Ashiras. But there are things that you're commanded to do, and there are things that you choose to do. And they're just very different things.
Kedusha, it's region was being graded by Hashem.
Kedusha is
greater. Moshe asked for an another. And what we started with, this is a mass.
The work was a mass, not really the material. See, I wanted to speak about the material. I'm gonna try, remind me next time to talk about this material because it was a failure in a different way. David HaMelech prepared all the material. He didn't need all this work. We'll talk about it next time. The point I wanted to make is that if you'll notice, we never refer, refer to the Beis HaMikdash as Shlomo's building. We always call it Sukkas David. We don't append Shlomo HaMelech's name to the Beis HaMikdash for generations. We call it Mizmor Shir Chanukas HaBayis LeDavid. The Beis HaMikdash, David's Beis HaMikdash. We don't refer to it as Shlomo's Beis HaMikdash. And this may well be a piece of it. The idea that what Shlomo added, the splendor he added, that's icy blast. It's not.
Does the Gemara level this criticism or say anything about this contrast?
The Gemara doesn't discuss this at length, so to my knowledge.
Kind of
it doesn't. Well, you have to learn Navi and get a feel.
Right.
If you learn Navi with Rishayim, you get a feel of what Shlomo HaMelech was all about. The Gemara does say the following. On the day the Beis HaMikdash was consecrated, Shlomo HaMelech overslept. Overslept. No. And that night he married Bas Paroi. And that day an angel came down from heaven and stuck a rod into the Mediterranean Sea, and the sand started to gather, and that ultimately became Italy and Rome. So the Gemara does say there was something very wrong with this Beis HaMikdash, or with Shlomo's participation in Beis HaMikdash.
Wait, it says they wanted to add one more melech to the four melechim. They wanted to add one more.
They wanted to take Shlomo out of the melech of Tzadikim. It's true. To add Shlomo melech to the but that you can argue it doesn't have to do with the Beis HaMikdash.
Right.
But this was the day the Beis HaMikdash was built. He overslept. He didn't oversleep 1 hour. It says he slept 4 hours late. 4 hours past sunrise. So why did that happen? That happened because God made it happen. You know, Shlomo HaMelech was no slouch. Now forgive me up there, Shlomo HaMelech. He's much greater than any of us. I don't start up. And just the Musar of the Nach, I'm just trying to explain to you.
Didn't that Dovin HaMelech's love
for him? The doors didn't open.
Sounds like it. What?
The doors didn't open for him.
The doors didn't open for him, that's right. The doors didn't open until they said, supposed to start. Yeah, quite embarrassing. He came late and then the doors didn't open. It wasn't a good day. And they shechted 1,000, they had to have enough time to shecht 1,000, Shlomim. Anyway, Shlomo was extraordinarily great. His goals were good goals. But the focus on his mission of bringing the world under the Ravina Shalom somehow caused him to forget some of the internal guts of Klal Yisrael that also needed to be preserved.
I think from what you're saying, you get a very contradictory and conflicting view of who Shlomo HaMelech.
Absolutely.
Was.
There was a conflict.
He misses chakras, you know.
There was definitely a conflict. He wasn't an ordinary fellow who missed chakras, but there was a certain conflict in Shlomo HaMelech and his greatness and his failures.